The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Episode 109. I'm super excited. This is a guest that I've known for a long time and I met in a strange way. And he hails originally from Minnesota like me, so we're kind of connected like that. Before I bring him on, I want to thank everybody for listening to Goldie's Closet. Whether you watch it or you stream it, download it, listen to it, however, just thank you for being here. Thanks to everybody at the Realm Network and Mark. Thanks to Jeff Lane. Thanks, Vince Russo, for allowing me this show and to be able to connect and talk to so many great people. And also, just thanks to our patrons who make creating content possible. If you need a little extra love, come on over to patreon.com/Goldilocks. And as always, make sure you're patronizing Vince's brand, because I wouldn't even know about all of this if it wasn't for him. So check out Russo's brand. You know where to find him, russosbrand.com. He's got some really, really great shows, great talent, great content, and just a bro. He's a good all-around guy. So back to my guest. I met him recording. He had an incredibly successful recording studio in Nashville, Tennessee, where he did just a lot of really interesting things, not just music, but like a lot of the promos and a lot of the ads that you hear for your favorite concerts coming to town or radio promotions or you name it, he would say it. Now he is the face, the spokesman for Exxon Oil. He's crushing it everywhere, hailing now from somewhere in Florida. Realm Network, brand fam, a warm round of applause for my friend, colleague, and next guest, Mr. Bob Oakman. Well, look at you. Wow. Bob, I mean, how exciting that you just renewed your contract. What?
I did. It's awesome. And I'm not going on as much as they originally intended, but it might work up to that.
I just think the whole thing is incredible. And I remember when we did our photo shoot, kind of learning a little bit about your story, and you've just got one of those like really incredible stories of like shit hitting the fan and then just building yourself back up just like I did. And I love those stories just because I think so many people out there, especially I'm going to say coming out of the tail end of this bullshit. Right. I think so many people just need to be inspired and know that like real people have real success and dreams do come true, and it might be in different levels, but like to look for the opportunity that's out there and kind of stay true to yourself and what you love. And you just stayed on your track from real early days. So let's just take everybody back to like, and we will talk about what you're doing now, but like, how did you even start out? Because I met you at this glorious recording studio right in the heart of Nashville, Tennessee, not some freaking suburb, but like, right there.
Right on Broadway, Nashville.
God, yeah. I mean, I don't even want to know what like that cost, but you obviously, you know, we're doing well.
Yeah, I can do, you know, really the story begins at birth. I was born in 19, is that too far back?
Yeah. you take us back to where wherever you want to.
Back in 1956, my birth happened. And by the time I was like 2 years old, so 58, I had a talent. Now, that's not me. It's not something that I worked up. This is God-given talent. So I was able to hear notes. In my whole life, I've been able to hear notes, hear frequencies, and understand their relationship. And I've had a sense of rhythm. So when I was a little kid, my mom and dad gave me a little xylophone, and I listened to my little yellow 78-speed records, and I played along with the songs, and I played correctly. So as I grew, I found that pretty much any instrument that I grabbed, I could play.
Wow.
So unlike some people who had to struggle and fight to try to learn an instrument, it just happened for me. And of course, you get better at it and your muscle memory gets better. So I was attracted to the guitar, so I got into the guitar. And as I grew and went through school, we played the turnabouts and we played the school parties and whatever. And then I went on to play rock and roll. Got a little sidetracked with some welding and crane operating because I seem to have an aptitude for physics as well. But when I gave up that job, the crane job, I went full-time musician, and I traveled with a Christian rock band all over the continent.
I didn't know this.
Yes, and we played rock and roll, and it was a good time. So that introduced me to people and to studios, and I loved the studio work, and I eventually ended up getting a job at a music store / concert sound and lighting company. So I got to do sound for people like Edgar Winters, Black Oak Arkansas, way back in the day. A lot of bands. And I don't know. I just stayed with the whole studio thing. I loved it. And as time went on, we'll skip forward now. Jobs come, jobs go. As you probably know, being a rock and roller, playing music was the best income I ever had and the worst income I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah,
sometimes you fight over a peanut butter sandwich on the bus. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you have abundance.
Yes.
But that got old after a while as I aged and got married and everything like that. And you hear my voice. It was very, very difficult for me to sing backup harmonies. Unless it was oom, ba, ba, ma, ma, something like that, right? So I was out of work at one point, and a friend of mine was building a radio station in northern Minnesota. Mm-hmm. He got a license for a 100,000-watt stick way up in the Great White North, eh?
I remember.
And I built the radio station. I helped build it. I literally pounded nails and screwed screws, and I wired the thing, and we put it all together. Well, after it was built, I didn't have a job again. Mm-hmm. And I thought about going back on the road, but my wife at the time didn't want me to do that. And he said, Frank Beffra, who was the owner of the station, said to me, well, you have a heck of a voice. Maybe you should be a DJ on the station.
Oh, I didn't know this story either.
And I said, in my northern Minnesota, half Canadian, half Scandinavian accent. Oh, geez, I never tried that, eh? I'll give it a shot. And so I modeled, I didn't know any DJ, so I modeled, you know, to try to lose my accent, I modeled my voiceover after Frank Zappa.
Nice.
Because he did some of those songs like, you know, watch out where the huskies go and don't you eat that yellow snow. I had instant success for whatever reason. And within 2 years working at that station, I ended up getting a call from a program director in Houston, Texas. And I landed at KKBQ in Houston,
wow,
which at the time was the number 3 station in the nation, as creative service director, because I have the studio experience now and you know, and the voiceover experience, and it came together. So I did all the commercials for them. 2 years in that, and I was heard by, I guess I started competing with Bill Young. Bill Young, if people don't know, is pretty much the legendary voiceover guy that started the whole concert genre thing.
Okay.
I think his first client was ZZ Top, probably. And Bill took me under his arm, and his tutelage was invaluable. So I went to work for, at that time, probably 52 people working at this studio. It was a very large studio. And it was pressure like you cannot believe. There were times I'd do 20 to 50 concert spots a day. For Metallica, for Kenny Chesney, for Miranda Lambert, who I'm still working for to this day. And the list goes on and on. And at one point, probably after Bill retired, I did I was doing probably 80% of the tours there.
Bob, what would one of those promos sound like? Let's say Metallica is coming to town, and what are they going to be doing? Metallica is coming to town, and they're going to be babysitting children.
Well, yeah, that would be. You wouldn't believe it. Metallica live in Nancy's house, babysitting her children. And it has to do with the music and everything, too. That's what you learn. The production part of it is really, really important. It's not just voiceover.
You've done some spots for us, you know, helped us out when we've had some fairs and whatnot. And I'm always just so blown away by, again, not just the voiceover, not just the quality, not just your tone, but like where you place things. It's so strategic. And, you know
there's something to be, something that I've learned over many, many, like 30 years of doing this. You know, you're playing to a short attention span world, and you have to keep their attention all the time. Mm-hmm. But you have to draw them in. You know, it's not just, I've used the example, I did a lot of monster trucks, and that's how Exxon found me, by the way, and motorcycle jumping and that kind of thing. And you don't just say, watch motorcycles jumping 70 feet in the air. You tell a story and get people involved. At high altitudes where the air is thin, the brain starves for oxygen, sometimes causing madness. But the way these madmen choose to get there takes more guts than brains. And now everybody is going, what is this? Then you hear a motocross bike, and now you've drawn them in. And you're looking to release that little chemical in your brain that gives you goosebumps. And it's the same with building a bed. I could beat mix all day long and make perfect edits. That's not my motivation. I'm not playing to my peers, all two of my production pals. You know what I mean? I don't care if they like what I make. I care if it sells the ticket. So I'll give a little hint that there's an edit coming up. The edit doesn't have to be perfect. It just has to be in the right place. And there might be a drum roll or something coming into that edit, and your brain says, I think a change is coming. Sure enough, a change comes, and then your brain says, I was right, and you get that little endorphin boost. So you've hooked into people, and that's something that you can't, I don't know, I guess it's an emotion. Am I making sense?
Yeah, it reminded me when you were saying that of now I link that in my brain to when you're doing a movie trailer, when you're doing the voiceover for that. It sounds the same way, you know, like the old classic, in a world of, you know, it's the same thing. Like, so I'm putting this into my brain. What you're saying is, how can I get my promos better, and how can I do a better job describing things? So you're saying like you almost paint a picture first with description, get people wondering, asking the question, and then deliver. That's what I mean.
Or whatever it takes to draw people in. And sometimes getting them involved in the promo. It's a radio or a television ad. We hate when ads come on. We're watching our favorite movie, an ad comes on. We hate it. We're going to tune out. But if I do something to get them involved, to make them question, what is this? Or what is this guy going to do next? Or I feel uncomfortable because this whole promo sounds like it's about to fall apart. I'm building tension on purpose. You know what I mean? So now I made them turn their head back and look. You try. It's not 100% success.
No, I'm watching. There's such an oversaturation of content out there with every dipshit Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Right.
You know, and it's just like, I'm going to tell you what literally, like, and I have to be careful because, you know, I want people to follow us on Patreon, or I want people to do health and wellness with me. And it's hard to not sound salesy when I've been in sales or in commercial my entire life, and I'm passionate about things. But what is driving me freaking crazy is every ad these days is an ad for the program. I'm going to sell you a program.
I'm going to sell you a program.
How to be better at this, or how to be better. And it's just like, it's so aggressive and so in your face that like the minute I even see it coming on, I hit mute on my computer if I'm on YouTube or whatever, because I don't want to hear you who can't do jack shit, who's just selling a program that I don't even know if you're good at it or not. You know, like you're just selling another program. Like it's wearing me out. So that really hit home with what you just said about just what you just said.
Your motivation is to get people to the show. Or once they see what you're doing, they'll understand. But to get them there isn't necessarily, I mean, how can you put everything that you're doing, and I've rarely met a person that's busier than you are.
Obviously.
And, you know, you can't put that into 30 seconds or 15 seconds. So you can't feel guilty about hyping it.
It's a weird thing. It's a weird.
You don't want to turn people off too. I know it's a strange thing.
No, and at the end of the day, like I'm really selling. Like everybody sells their stuff, but really, I mean, you know me pretty well. At the end of the day, I'm selling connection.
I'm selling
love and friendship. Like if you are interested in anything that I have to say, then I want to be your buddy. Like. You know, other girls are selling their panties and their bullshit and their this and that. And I have 8x10s that I sell too, but it's not the fucking 8x10 that I want to sell you. It's that, okay, you ordered something from me. Now I get to sit and marinate on, who's Joe Blow? And I'm going to look up Joe Blow. Joe Blow likes to ride motorcycles, and I'm going to write that out and tell you to ride on. And, you know, it's the connection.
With the little small voice up here, I wonder what Joe Blow is going to do with my picture. Well, never mind.
Yeah. I've had so many guys that I've dated said, you know, and I'm like, he's like, you know what they, and I'm like, nah, I don't want to go down there.
but how do you say what it is you're trying to sell? And you're trying to sell something. I don't mean that in a negative way.
Oh no, I don't either. No.
You know, when you're bull riding, what motivates a man to strap his legs around a nostril flaring, hoof flying, fire breathing animal hell bent on stomping him into the ground? That's what I mean. That's overhyping it, or not necessarily. Bull riding is pretty out there.
But you just described it to a T.
It's a way of putting it that's hopefully interesting. You know, so what's interesting about you? Besides boobies and booty, you know what I'm saying? That's the obvious way to get people's attention, but that's not the attention you want. You know what I mean?
No, I love it. I'm actually, my wheels are turning for something else. That's me jetting off. But like you just said, one of the guys that is on the same brand that this podcast lives at, Russo's brand, his name is Bin Hameen. He's a wrestler. But he's also a marketing guy. He has a marketing agency, and he is my mentor for Patreon. So he helps me come up with creative and whatnot, and oversees some things. But we have a new show coming out called Lock Up Your Love. And Lock Up Your Love is a dating show. It's virtual. It is just like the old fashioned dating game, but it's new and current. And I just asked him for some, you know, one-liners and things to put into a spot, and the stuff that he came back with right now sounds exactly like what you just said with, I wonder what they're doing with that 8x10, or the bull rider strapping his legs around it. There is a definite science and a definite formula to all of this. And it's like, you're so honed in and focused and laser sharp on that. And that's what, I guess that's probably why you got the gig with Exxon. You know, they want somebody that has experience that they don't have to teach or tell what to do. You're just going to kind of do it.
Yeah. When I did the shoot for Exxon, they absolutely enjoyed that. I just did what they asked me to do. And it was a big shoot. Incidentally, Exxon, again, was one of those things that wasn't anything that I did or I went out and tried to get it. It was God. He gave it to me.
I was just going to say, like everybody on this brand is like a total God mark.
It was strange. I had fans at Exxon and I didn't know it. And they had contacted me about doing voiceover for Mobil 1 because it's Exxon Mobil technically. And I said, okay, yeah, I'll do it, of course. I mean, that's a, you know, a union voiceover. That's Actors Guild wages and all of that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I could use money, sure. And 2 years went by, and I never heard from them again. And then out of the clear blue, they had seen a video on YouTube that I have of me doing it live, pushing faders and doing it. And they said, we want that. And next thing I knew, I was in Vancouver shooting for Exxon with food trucks. And I had a one woman that held my hair up and another one that fanned my neck in between takes, and one that held an umbrella over my head so the sun wouldn't make me too hot. I never experienced anything like that before. I've sit by myself in a studio, myself.
That's in, like, I've got something similar going on with a 2.5 year, didn't hear from him during that time, but COVID crept in and whatnot. And my mom always taught me that God helps those who helps themselves. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, you can say, I didn't do anything to get this huge gig. This isn't even a gig. That's just, you know, I didn't do anything, but you did, mm-hmm. because you just said, I put up this YouTube video of me pushing the faders and mm-hmm. you've got all of these years. But then what comes into factor is just your overall belief and faith. And that's what, you know, I really do see God as however we picture him in a character or whatever, but I really do see like a loving dude up there who's just like, who's being cool to me down there? This is me. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, who believes in me, although they haven't seen me? Mm-hmm. Who believes in me, although they haven't heard me? Like, and yeah. When people that don't believe say,
so, well, yeah, all this is with me is me giving him credit. That's my way of saying thank you. I'm going to give you credit for it. I didn't do it.
Yeah. But you did. God helps them, those who help themselves. Mm-hmm. You did help yourself. So
right.
Number one, you're getting off your ass and you're doing something. You're being proactive, but then you have this thing called faith and gratitude towards your maker, the angels.
Yeah. And how hard is it, by the way, to get up off your ass after all this shutdown stuff and COVID and everything else? I mean, the industry that I am in, it probably looks like I'm looking away from you because I'm looking at your face on the screen.
Well, that's fine.
And the camera's down there. Anyway, it was already, the entertainment industry was already going downhill. Mm-hmm. Record labels closing, selling their buildings, getting smaller buildings. You know, it was already getting bad. And then the competition in my industry, in the concert industry, everything started popping up everywhere. Live Nation began buying everybody, and you know the whole story. So us independent guys kind of got squished a little bit. So I was still okay. Then COVID hit, and of course I do events and concerts and all that kind of stuff. Gathering was not allowed. So yeah. It just went away.
Yep.
And you do what you got to do, right? So I got a job for the railroad in northern Minnesota. And I went and swung a pick and ran a big vacuum truck for a company called Maviro. And then the COVID killed that too. So here I am back in Southwest Florida, yeah, sitting in my studio. And it's coming back slowly. It's coming back.
That's been so hard. And the hardest thing out of all of it was having like some people near and dear to my heart say, well, you know, when this is all over, you know, maybe you should just get a real job. Oh, pardon me.
What are you doing? Yeah, watch out now. Don't be touching the keyboard.
Yeah, that was nothing like some feline ass right in my face.
I'll, yeah, exactly.
The only ass I've had in a while. So that was the hardest thing for me, is having people, because of COVID, just decide and cancel out. And these are people that supported me, you know, like loved what I was doing and made me feel like I was invincible. And then all of a sudden they didn't turn on me. I'm sure they were concerned, like, you're not essential. And then all of a sudden, the people that sometimes get made fun of, like for being a Walmart greeter or working at McDonald's, or which is a perfectly amazing job, and work is work, and I love it. And I'm not dissing that. I'm saying that before COVID, if you said you could have a job at Walmart being a greeter, or you could be in a Hollywood movie, well, most people out there would lean towards being the Hollywood celebrity or star or influencer, or voiceover or whatever. But all of a sudden, it's like with the COVID, all of the movie stars are, holy shit, what do I do? And all of the actors and the rock stars that I know, all the tours got canceled. And it was like there was this great shift of like what was cool again. And I wonder if that'll ever change, because now when I hear, I've got somebody I know that's listening to this who delivers pizzas to stores and whatnot for, and I always looked at him as like, wow, that's a really stable, secure job. But now it's like, I look at him as a rock star, like everybody's going to always eat pizza. That's never going out of style. That sounds good right now. That's never going to go out of style as I eat my paleo carb fucking friendly diet. It's never going to go out of style. And I look at my friends who are HVAC techs or who are plumbers or electricians. I'm thinking, you know, you guys don't have the most glamorous job, but when shit hits the fan again, which I'll probably be dead in 100 years when it does, thank God, you'll be essential again. And it's just, it really changed the way things. But the hardest thing was just having people think that my job as an entertainer or all the things that I do, like, didn't matter anymore.
Yeah, I mean, living in Hollywood, imagine you're a successful actor and you have a $20,000 a month house payment.
Yeah.
And the income stops and you didn't anticipate it and you didn't invest in silver or Bitcoin.
Is that right?
You know what I mean? It's going crazy and so right now. All of a sudden it's cut off. Well, that was like me in a smaller way. My house payment's not $20,000 a month.
And you know what?
Far from it.
Mine will never be, no matter how much success I see after seeing this firsthand and going back to like, okay, now I know what my mom was dealing with the Great Depression, or my dad, or my dad wasn't born then, he was born later. But like that time frame, like now I understand even more not wasting and being cheap and being frugal and not spending spending within your means and not going into debt. And, you know, there's a reason why all those things are pounded into you, but
And everything in life comes with a price. I remember Kenny Chesney when he was married for a short time. And then the marriage fell apart and whatever. I don't want to talk about that, but when he was in LA, the paparazzi are going completely bananas on him. He can't get away from them. And the frustration, he looked at my friend Tom and he said, "Welcome to my fucking life." It's not a picnic for him either. I mean, he has nicer cars and homes than I do, but it's not a picnic. I guarantee it, you know, and it's not easy being poor either.
No,
you just try your best and try to keep a positive attitude. Something I struggle with from time to time.
You seem like you do really good with that, Bob. I wouldn't think that you do. You appear.
People that are close to me are always yelling at me about having low self-esteem and not having a positive attitude. I mean, for the purpose of this interview, I'm telling you about all the coolest things in my life.
Yeah.
But I'm not telling you everything. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm not always on top of the pile, that's for sure.
Well, none of us are. I do my best to always push out the most sunny, optimistic brand. Man, when I get off, holy shit. I feel sorry for my close friends or the people that are like in my inner circle, because there's times when I'm like, I can't even talk right now. Like, I am so emotionally drained by so many people just hitting me up for everything. Like, I can't even function right now, and I'm shutting off my phone because I feel like my brain is going to explode.
Do you have a crutch or something that you do to get out of that?
That's a great question. Okay, so when I am like that, because it seems as though at the end of the night, and we're halfway into the hour, so I respect your time. We'll keep going a little bit if that's okay. Yeah. And everybody that watches this and listens are they're diehard fucking phenomenal people. I don't use fans. I say supporters or followers or friends. And I mean, I swear to God, at the end of some nights, if I'm tired enough, I feel like killing myself. I won't do that. And I'm not like suicidal.
You know better, but
I know like better, but like there's like, I'll give you a perfect example. Let's be very transparent. I just got off of a huge production. I've been talking to a network and this'll come out and people will know. I kind of got to dance around it. Like now that we're so far in that these people already know because they're already patrons, and I kind of been teasing it. So I get a Facebook, message, and it goes into the spam filter. Well, I'm not trying to sound like a dickhead, but I get 200 to 300 stupid fucking messages a day, like, "Hey, what's up? Yeah. What you doing? Like, see what I'm doing. Don't waste my time. What do you want? Yeah. You know, do you want to go out? You want to buy something? You want to book us? What do you?" So I don't even look at all that stuff. Well, I'm looking, and there's like 3 or 4 messages. Somebody saying we're trying to get your attention. Well, I get lots of people with bullshit stuff. You know, it's like, who knows what you want? You just want to talk to me or lick my dick or something. So, and it was like this British lady. She just kept saying, "Goldie, we're really trying to get a hold of you for something." Finally, I like big long thing. I'm like, what is the? Oh shit! You know, it's like it's a huge production company. They're in the UK. They're like the biggest deal ever. And they're trying to get a hold of me because, like you, they saw me pushing up the faders, only it was folding socks and putting them down my underwear for TLC's Extreme Cheapskates. Well, yeah. they were doing something and they were like, the same thing. I want that. That's what I want. And I didn't see it. And I'm like, oh my God, can I do a Skype or Zoom with you, please? Like, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to blow you off. We start talking 2.5 years ago. A year goes by, another half a year, and we're working all the time. This stuff takes time sometimes if it's a big enough thing, or in your case, it is a big thing, but you had a huge team of people at Exxon getting it all lined up for you, and then let's fly Bob out. Well, mine is in the UK, taking longer, gearing up. I'm all excited. I don't tell anybody. And then what happens is right around this time last year, I got a call from the producer I was working with for a year, teary-eyed. Gorgeous gay man in the UK. Like, I was talking to this guy every 3 days. I like felt connected and invested in this man. Teary-eyed saying, "I've been furloughed. They're laying me off." And then everybody one by one is getting, you know, basically fired. I didn't lose hope at all because I really do believe in God. And I'm like, I am not even going to let 1 ounce of shit come through my brain. It's coming. It's coming. I'm going to wait it out. And I'm going to do everything I can in the meantime. And this is an important lesson for people listening. If you've got a goal and you've got something that's not quite in your control, then do everything you can do in your own time to keep sharp, to keep the skill set going, to stay on top of things. So finally, it's all.
Maybe and sometimes it's an uphill battle to keep the motivation. It is
an uphill, but I was like, nope, I'm keeping my eye on the prize. That's something that somebody's always, ironically, the person who turned on me and said, get a real job is the person who's always said, Moon, keep your eye on the prize, keep your eye on the prize. So I'm keeping my eye on the prize. Finally, 6 months ago, we start working. And then I've been gone for a month. We did our thing. Oh my God, with the COVID in place, with the COVID police, with going to the hospital every day, getting a test, with having my temperature taken fucking every 60 minutes, not being able to sit by people, touch people, making people cry on TV and not being able to touch them or, hi, I'm over here. I'm sorry that I just talked about you. It was horrible, but I made it through. I get home and it's like, you know, when you're working on a big production and all of a sudden it's done and you're not talking to any of these people you've been talking to. And it's like, I felt like over the last 3 or 4 days, like I got out of prison. I felt like I get out of prison and I know no one and I have no money and I'm walking around like it's the strangest sensation when you get done with this big, huge thing and then you're back to reality.
Wow.
And
now
I've got to find another job now. And that'll come out when it comes out. And I can't tell anybody, or they'll say, when does it come out? Or we just do it and just let it go and God takes care of it. That's how I hand it off to God. But my point is like over the last few days, as all of this stuff, all the responsibilities, it's
and
like,
then it goes.
and I literally think like, and then you ask like, what's your crutch? Like, what's your thing? I have to literally walk over to the mirror and say to myself out loud, this isn't real. You're not this depressed. Tomorrow is a new day. And one thing I've learned is don't pick up the phone when people are calling, when you know you're going to go off, you're going to pick a fight, you're going to cause a problem. Like, so for me, honestly, if I go to the gym or even do 20 minutes in my studio of jumping jacks, of push-ups of anything. And then honestly, God, I go,
I wish I had the motivation to do a push-up.
Dude, it's hard to do, but you just have to do it. Or you go on your rides. I know you love your Harley. You love your bike. Doesn't that help you with
that? Really, really helps me. Yeah. I get on the Harley and I just roll. Wind therapy or whatever you want to call it.
Where do you go? Anywhere?
I get lost. And inevitably, I'll stop at some little waterside gin joint and have a glass of wine and look at the boats. A lot of people live on their boats right on the docks, you know, by some of the places I go. And it's just gorgeous. And it makes me smile. But when I'm on the bike, I got the tunes cranked up and I'm happy.
What do you think when you look off having your glass of wine at those boats? Like, do you pray, give me more abundance? Do you thank? Do you freak out?
I do. I pray. I think crazy stuff. My mind is, it's really hard for me to even focus and talk to you because my mind's going in many different directions all the time. You know, and I'm like, well, if I was single, I'd live on a damn boat. Hell yeah. Well, I'm not single though. I'm not saying that I want to be single, but if I was, that would be kind of cool. I wonder if that guy ever scrapes the barnacles off the bottom of that thing. I bet you it hasn't run in 15 years. But, I mean, it's just, it's not, oh, I lost my studio in Nashville.
No.
Oh, you know, Exxon quit running the ads. I don't know if it's going to come back. It's not that. It's something else, and it just feels good.
Good, good. Yeah. That, and that's very important for people when that noise starts creeping into your head about worry. Like a woman, a very wise woman that she'd always say, go to your borrowing trouble. You can't worry about something that you have no control over. You just have to focus on the next stuff, you know. And I was super excited to do this interview with you because you're just such an interesting guy. You've done such interesting things. And
well, I could tell you some stories that are unrelated to the production voiceover and studio industry that are kind of interesting. Oh, I don't regret anything I've done in my life.
No, I want to hear it. Give me a story, please.
No. I mean, just, you know, the days I'd incriminate myself. Let's put it that way. The trouble I got into in my younger days, you know, you're full of piss and vinegar when you're young. And maybe it was my Norwegian blood. I don't know what it was, but there's so much testosterone surging through my veins. Sometimes I had to run through the woods and scream. I just couldn't, you know, hold it back. So I got into trouble. And there are some interesting stories. We'll say that.
Well, you don't need to be a dude to have a lot of testosterone and run through the wilderness. And I can think of times when I was younger with the temper that I have, where I think I was arguing with a boyfriend one night and I was really mad. It was a stupid argument. He was in the wrong on that one. Like, I don't know. I maybe spilled something at his apartment or something that I was like paying for. You know what I mean? And he came and he's like, I hope you pay almost all of this rent and you're going to be this mean. And we fought and I left and I was just like, I want a pizza. I wanted a pizza more than anything. Well, I went and they closed early. And I tried to smash down the door and the glass at Domino's. Like, that's how, like, I was like,
yeah, you were going to have a pizza. Yeah.
I was like, how dare you? And I was like, why are you going to break down their window? Like, what are you going to do once you get in there? Like, well, anyway, they called the cops on me and I drove backwards in the car so they couldn't see my license plate. And then I hit somebody else driving backwards. And so
I don't know if you know, but perhaps I've talked to you about this, but at one point I was making a lot of money doing what I do. It was my early days in Nashville. So that was probably 20 years ago, 18, 20 years ago.
Okay.
And I had a court situation come up. I didn't do anything wrong, but I had a court situation come up and what I believe to be a dirty judge.
Sure.
It wouldn't allow me to give evidence, wouldn't allow witnesses, could he have been paid off by, you know, the plane? I don't know. But they came in and took everything I owned, everything, literally. I mean, cleaned me out. We were homeless and hungry and had nothing. And that was right before I built the big studio. So the end of the story is good. But for a while, there was nothing. I was so angry that I tore muscles in my torso. I was, you know,
Oh my God.
Just pissed beyond. And I'm not an angry person. I have no temper. I'm not violent. I got violent, but I didn't take it out on any person. But my trash cans, I destroyed them. Made me feel better.
Off your ripping muscles and your guts. Jeez. Smashing.
Well, that's just how stressed and angry I was at the time. It was a big, long to do, a big, long ordeal, and it was horrid. Just horrid. But after that, I got some investment. We built that studio, 6,500 square foot studio, downtown Nashville on Broadway. You were there.
It was
a great place. I still have the bar in my man cave here at my house in Florida. I had to cut it down. It was a little big for my man cave, but it's in here. Good memories.
That was good times. And just because things change doesn't mean that there aren't new opportunities on the horizon, and we constantly evolve and people shouldn't be afraid of. Mm-hmm.
Hey, I just signed a bunch more contracts for Exxon. I don't know what's happening because through the COVID thing, all the people that I worked with lost their jobs too.
Sure.
So now I'm there's new people. So I don't have the communication, but at least I know that they're going to be running some of my stuff. I don't think we're shooting anything new right now, but
that's huge. Like the fact that everybody's gone that you dealt with and they're still wanting you around is a really big testament to you and your talent. So you should take that one to the bank and
Yeah, it's a good thing. So it's going just online. The videos are just online, not television right now. But I cross my fingers and hope and pray if it goes on television and I become the next Emu Limu or whatever. You know what I mean? If they run it enough, then I'm okay. Then I don't need retirement.
And you know what you said, because I'm not one to camp out or talk about age or anything like that, but you did mention, you know, your heyday was 20 years ago in Nashville, like not your heyday, a very successful time that could be perceived as one's heyday. And then here's 20 years later, and all of a sudden you just got this huge contract again. And I love people to hear that. And it literally made me tear up when you told me, can I come over and just do a couple of promo things because, you know, I've got this thing and blah, blah, blah. And it was just like, I was so excited for you. No different than the opportunity that I just got done wrapping up. Like opportunity comes at every minute, every hour, every age of your life. Don't let anybody or society or anything condition you into thinking, well, I should have done this then because now my time is up. Or you don't know when your time is. And that's, again, where God and faith comes in, because pray to who you pray to and just say, not only like, when is it coming, but just thanks. I know it's coming. Mm-hmm. You know, I know something great's, I know you got something great for me, and I'm thanking you now, and I can't wait to see what it is.
If we're made in God's image, God speaks and things are created.
Yeah.
So what we say is important.
It is.
I'm not saying we're going to go around and create a new species of animal with our mouths. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying what you say about yourself, about your circumstances, literally can steer the circumstances. That's something I still haven't learned. And I'm, as you said, I'm 65. I'm getting up there. So,
well,
you're such a good photographer. You made me look 55.
I was just pulling you up to like kind of comb through and look at some things. And I saw all the Exxon ones. And there's a couple that we took here that were really cool. And then I saw you or somebody else, must have been you, took out the background of the studio on your bike and you put it with the clouds or flames or something. I was like, man, that guy is another good lesson. He is milking everything that we did that day that you came over to the studio. You milked that shoot and you'll continue to puke it. You continue to milk it for what it's, just make good of an opportunity. Like so many times when people come over here and they spend $5,000-$10,000 on photos. And you know what? I don't even see that they took them out of the Dropbox. I don't even see that they looked at the email. It doesn't even mark it as read. Like they have so much money and they just blow it. And then, oh, I did my photo shoot. And it's like, okay, cool. What are you going to do with that stuff then? They don't even do anything with it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you should have a website, somebody on the Exxon staff said to me.
And you did.
And so I did a website. Now, it's not the greatest thing in the world. You know, I haven't put a lot of thought into it, but thank God I had those photos, right?
Are you kidding? I went to where is it, BobOakman.com. I went and looked at it, and I was so proud to see you hustling. And again, God helps those who help themselves. Like, you just put all of this stuff on there so that when somebody does see the faders being pushed up on YouTube, or let's move it ahead to when they do see or hear the Exxon commercials, or then they go to a landing page, and then all of a sudden, there you are. You're bookable. You know, it's, there's something to be said about getting off your ass and actually doing the wax on, the wax off, the paint the fence.
Yeah,
you know, all that stuff really matters. So
I'm a parody of myself. Billy Big Rigger got a funky fresh mix. That's the copy they came up with, because that's what people think of me. You know what I mean?
How did the monster truck stuff stemmed from one day just a promo came through? Because that's your thing. You're the monster.
Well, yeah. And a lot of people say, because Exxon puts me on pumps, pictures of me and posters and everything, and they're like, legendary monster truck boys, Bob Oakman says, blah, blah, blah. And all these people, like, I've been in monster trucks for years and I never heard of Bob Oakman. So you got to go back a little farther. These are young folks. It's changed. You know, back in the day, like I said, when I went to work for Bill Young Productions before I went out on my own, when Bill retired, and this was what, in the 90s, I became Bill for a while. A couple of us did, and they didn't even know Bill retired. I learned how to talk like Bill. And I did monster trucks all the time. The Sunday thing, we came up with it. Saturday Night Live did a parody on it and didn't even know who it came from. That was one of my clients, who's still my client to this day. But the really big monster truck clients, which in those days was, I think, SFX and then Clear Channel Bottom and then Live Nation about Clear Channel or however that goes, I'm not on that. So now I'm not a household name as far as monster trucks go, but I was.
No, absolutely brilliant and so good at everything that you do. So we will be looking ahead in the new year for all of the ads online, and I'm just excited for you.
Do I sound too arrogant talking about all this stuff? I really hate arrogance. I hate it.
No, not at all. That's what the whole point. We have guests on here that are interesting to talk about what they're doing to promote it, to introduce them to the beautiful audience that I have on the Realm Network and on Vince Russo's brand. And you are just right up there with a lot of these guys who they would connect with and identify with and dig. You know, I bring on some crazy guests sometimes. And I think,
can I ask you a question before? Oh, I don't know how much longer we have, but
we have 10 minutes or less, whatever you want.
Back when you were wrestling, did it hurt?
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, and I was thinking to myself, like, I can't even raise my arm. I don't know what I did to my shoulder, but I'm like, all right, it's time to go. And I'm thinking, what the fuck did I do? Did I do something? Or like, and then I've got all this time in wrestling where I'm getting thrown around like a rag doll, and I never got hurt like bad, like this, like it hurt, but I didn't get like some.
If you do it all the time, your body does something.
It does. Like you just become accustomed to it. And then when you first really start training, they just bash you so hard that, let's see if you can see it. Well, you can't, I'd have to like lift my leg up, but like, I've got like, I can't see it. Like, I just got this, I look down and it's like, I haven't been getting hit that hard, but I did some wrestling on TV last week. And it's like, it's, the bruises are so green, yellow, purple, you know, like, because I haven't been doing it.
And then Chris Jericho said that he quits wrestling once in a while to go on the road with Fozzy for 2 months or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said when he gets back, he gets thrown against the ropes one time and he's got huge bruises. And it was never like that before he left. And it takes a while to get back into it.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah. I love seeing him go and doing all of his monster cruises and all of that stuff. Like, to me, when somebody was saying that was their dream job. Oh, no, it was a podcast I was listening to right before this. My dream job is really to be able to just do TV and then go do band stuff and then come back and do TV and mix them, because it's just, I think it's so cool to be in a band. And then I love doing the television, because usually when you are doing TV, they try to find you something to do in music. You know, they have to like fix it and like, oh, Paris Hilton has a new record out, or Kim Kardashian sings the hits. It's like, all right, you know, like, that's why I don't ever want to stop doing that until I'm I probably will never stop. Got to keep it going. Like you said, sometimes things are an uphill battle, you know, but it doesn't mean to quit. It just means that you have to do something else to kind of sandwich it and make money in different places. Don't lose a bunch of money on your passion project, but you have to balance things, you know, balance things out.
I'll be honest. My dream job is to do nothing and make a hell of a lot of money doing it.
Are you? No, it's not. I don't, believe, I don't believe you.
I just want to ride my Harley and play my guitar all the time. My hands shake now. I'm old, so I can't play the guitar anymore, but I'll ride my Harley.
You'll probably ride.
I can. If I have three glasses of wine, the shaking stops. It's not the DTs, trust me.
Does it really?
Yeah.
Does it help?
It helps. It makes a difference. I don't know why. I did, for the Ghost Asylum guys, they asked me to do their music for their show on Discovery. I said, yeah, well, my hands shake and I miss strings and I can't play very good. I can do the drums and the bass and all that, but not really the guitar. And I told them, I said, but if I have a few glasses of wine, the shaking stops. And they're like, we got you. They showed up to the studio with moonshine.
Oh, shit.
We got it done. We got it done. It was great.
I love it. And speaking of riding, there's a place nearby my house that plenty of people ride, and I'm losing my mind at that place. I just wish it would go out of business. Oh, Bob, I pray every day. Please, God, a different business over there.
Why, 2 o'clock in the morning, loud pipes save lives.
3 o'clock in the morning? Yeah. Ouch. 3. Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah.
It's hard when you're trying to do podcasting or record. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the people don't live here, and they just are middle-aged muffin top men at the stop sign there, like revving, like just go home. I don't care if you patronize, but why you got to make so much freaking? Do you do that as a biker? Like, do you?
No,
just
no.
Make a shit ton of noise for no.
When
reason?
I first started riding, it sounds so cool when you rev a Harley.
Sure, it does.
Like you rev it sometimes when you really don't need to rev it, but anymore, I just sit at the stop sign and wait for the light to turn. I don't. You know, rev it and make noise.
Well, maybe not in front of somebody's house, for Christ's sake.
Right. No, no. I try to think about that.
Where can everyone find
I don't often rev my Harley, but when I do, I share it with the entire neighborhood.
Everybody can find you at BobOakman.com.
BobOakman.com.
And then are all of your socials listed on that website? Did you do that?
Yeah, anymore? I don't have a lot of socials right now. I got kicked off of Twitter. I didn't do anything mean. But I got booted off of Twitter because I followed somebody I shouldn't be following.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was same thing, Facebook jail and everything. And so I haven't done anything on Facebook. So I've signed up for all the new social media things. I'm still on YouTube. I didn't get booted off of that. So that was a good thing. So I'm on YouTube under Bob Oakman, also under Bob Oakman Productions, which my old studio was Pirate Studio LLC. I just changed the name. So it's got all the old Pirate Studio spots on it, but it's now under my flag. So
love it. I want to talk to you off the air. We'll conclude this. It's exactly the right amount of time. Everyone at Perfect. The Realm Network, Vince Russo's brand, patrons, thank you so much for just hanging out with me and Bob Oakman as we tell his story. The monster truck voiceover man. Studio Harley Rider.
Sunday, you know? Sunday, Sunday. Yeah.
And now the Exxon. I guess, I what would you call your role with Exxon now? Just ambassador?
I am spokesman for Synergy Diesel. So the diesel part of the brand, the Synergy Diesel, I'm spokesman. You can get 2% better fuel economy, you know.
Don't you know?
Yeah.
At the end, we always do a round of applause. Let me see you clap. Thanks, everybody. What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Just doing the daily check-ins on Patreon. Wanted to wish you the greatest start to your week. Come on over to Patreon. We're doing a lot of customized love. We just want to make sure everybody's getting the attention that they need and deserve, and that's merited. We still want to come by on regular social media platforms and say thank you so much for being here, both for me and for the band. Love you, and as always, stay golden.